Let's talk about fisting. This podcast contains material intended for a mature audience. Before proceeding, please check your local laws and confirm that you are an adult. Welcome to Full Cow, a podcast about leather, kink, and BDSM. My name is Edge, my pronouns are he, him, and I am your host. Fisting is our topic this time, and as usual, I begin by sharing my own journey in relation to this kink. Then, instead of providing you the education myself, I have an extensive educational interview with fisting superstar, I think we can call him, Hunger FF. We'll finish off with a couple of questions from the Ask Edge segment. All in all, I think it's a pretty fantastic episode, and I hope you like it. So let's get started. Although I have never identified primarily as a fister, and although I have only very recently started flagging red left, the truth is that fisting has been a pretty continuous thread through my kink journey. In fact, it was there at the very beginning. When I was a very, very young proto-leather man, I would go to a bar called Jewels in New Orleans, which was sort of the leather bar and sort of very seedy in a beautiful way. And there was a man there that I thought was so hot. And he would always have a red bandana in his back pocket. And I sensed it meant something. I knew that it meant something, but I didn't know what. Now, we're talking about very early 90s. This is well before the advent of the internet. There was no repository of knowledge. I could just go with a few clicks access. That was not possible. And he refused to tell me what it meant. He would not tell me as many times as I asked. So I had to do some creative research. And I believe what happened is that I found a gay rag, and in the back there was an ad for Red Hanky Social or something like that, and I made the connection in my head and probably sent a letter for information, and I think that's where I first made the connection between red hankies and fisting. So that was even before I really dove into kink. Now, if you've listened to the first episode of this podcast, you already know about my gay leather parents, Mark and Wally, who sort of adopted me from the very moment I started in leather. And part of what that meant, you know, they would have these sex parties, orgies, if you will, in their playroom. And so part of what that involved was me learning to fist from sort of day one. There was one of the guys who regularly attended was a lawyer, and I want to say his name was Jim. Again, you know, we're talking 30 years ago, and my memory is not always the best. But as I recall, it was Jim, and Jim liked to get fisted. So I have memories of Wally guiding my hand into Jim's ass. And my memories of fisting from that age are that, first, human bodies are really warm. Like, when you have your hand inside a body, it is 98.6 degrees in there. And then human bodies are also kind of messy, right? My hand would come out with clumps of stuff on it, which I don't really want to identify. So fisting was really one of the first things I learned as a kinkster, but it was never a huge thing for me. You know, my butt is not wired for pleasure in any way, and I'm not really super attracted to people's butts. I'm a face guy. You got a handsome face, you got some facial hair, you got beautiful eyes, you got a mohawk, I'm all about you. Your butt, yeah, okay, well, that's nice. You have a butt, I'm glad it's there. So I've never had an erotic connection to my butt or to the butts of other men. However, I'm a wee thing. You know, people don't always realize because it's hard to tell in the scale of photos, but I'm 5'7" and 175 pounds. So I'm compact, but it means that proportionally I have pretty small hands. And they're also collapse fairly easily. So I've got the tools that make me popular with men who like fists in their butts. And so off and on throughout my journey, I have fisted men, and I am nothing at all of an expert, but I am a very willing team player. In fact, a lot of times when I think about kink or talk about kink, I talk about it as a team sport. And that understanding for me really originated from my experience with fisting, that we are there together to give your butt all the pleasure we can give it. And all I have to do is cooperate with you. And that means listening to you and listening to your body and kind of setting my own agenda aside and being present for you. And that's how I fist. And that's been fairly successful for me, I will say, at least from the feedback I've gotten. And so there have been certain points throughout my life where I've been like, yeah, I'll put my tiny collapsible fist up your butt. Let's do that. More recently, I have developed, I would say, more of an interest in fisting. And this has been settling into my world for probably about a year now. Increasingly, I am attracting fisting bottoms in my orbit. Rubber boys as well, but that's another podcast. But I've been attracting people who like to get fisted into my orbit for a little while now. And what I've come to value about fisting them is the incredible intimacy of fisting. Actually, there are a lot of things I value. So first of all, as someone who's not big into sex, I am all about a scene where I don't feel any pressure to perform sexually, where the center of the scene is not a penis, mine or theirs, where sex is kind of on the side, if there at all. So I love that. I love that. Even though I'm the fister, I don't feel like I'm really in control or quote-unquote topping in the scene. Again, it's that team sense of let's work on this together. And I love how people who get fisted are just really laid back, my experience, because there will be times where it's just like, yeah, my butt's not going to cooperate. Let's just cuddle. So everything about the scene, first of all, feels very low pressure to me. First of all. Second of all, the only way I really know how to fist is to be completely and utterly present to that person's whole. And that means I take my awareness and I kind of mentally vision it going down my arm until my awareness is in my fingers and in my hand. And oftentimes I will close my eyes because I'm focused so intently on my hand and where it is and what their butt is doing and what their butt is telling me. So it's a scene where I'm not running off in my head. And it's a scene where I don't have to plan what the next step is because I'm not in charge in that way. It is a scene that allows me, in fact, demands that I be completely in that moment, completely present to and for that person. Then getting inside of them and then seeing the pleasure these men experience that I am providing for them. Fisting has become a really super duper duper intimate activity for me. The flip side of that is, since it's not like just my primary fetish, I'm not running around fisting any man I can find. It's not like I'm hungry for a hole for my hand on a Saturday night. No, it's there are men who enter into my life who I am willing to craft that intimacy with them, that I believe that the kind of bond, which isn't, you know, it's not as deep as some of the other bonds I do in some other scenes. It's not permanent, but it's special. And it is centered on pleasure and it's centered on presence. And some men will get that from me. Some men I want to have that intimacy with them. I want to have that experience with them. And those are the men I will stick my hand up. I expect that my experience with fisting will grow. I'm at an interesting point in my life where some of my fetishes are taking a pivot. And I believe fisting is one of those. Now, I don't think it will ever be something where I'm looking for someone on a weekend to just get off and shove my hand up. It's never going to be that. It's not like I'm so obsessed with fisting itself that I really jack off thinking about fisting someone. But I'm at a place in my life where I'm valuing the particular flavor of intimacy that fisting provides. And given the men who are moving into my world, I expect that to grow, and I welcome it. And we'll let you know. You know, I'll let you know how that journey goes. And I am so incredibly pleased to have with us here on Full Cow, Hunger FF. Hunger FF, welcome to Full Cow.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Can we get started by having you tell us how you identify in the community and what pronouns you like to use?
Okay, so I everybody knows me as Hunger FF, but I'm also really open about my real name too. So my real name is Ryan. It's a lot of people call me Hunger as if like FF is the last name, and so like they're just be like, so Hunger, and I'm like, no, it's Hunger FF. It's like share. It's like, so it's one word. So yeah, but I prefer to just go by Ryan because it's more personal and it's easier. And then he, him, his, my pronouns. Are my pronouns.
Wonderful. So briefly, can you tell us how you got started in fisting, which I'm sure is a much longer story than we have time for in this podcast, but give us a brief synopsis of how this became such a thing for you.
Do you want to know about how I got into fisting by itself or how Hunger FF came to be? Or is it just how I got into fisting?
Can I get both answers briefly?
Yeah, sure. So when I was a teenager and I was first kind of getting onto the internet and stuff, I discovered fisting on accident. It was a Matthew Paris video. I don't remember where I stumbled across it, but it was fistingcentral.com, which was kind of funny because I ended up on that website one day. But I saw it and it was just like a switch flicked in my brain. And I was like, oh my God, this is the hottest thing I'd ever seen. I was like 14 or 15. And so I was absolutely enthralled with it. And then as soon as I got on Manhunt when I was 18, I started checking the box for fisting and looking for other fisters in the area. And I grew up in Detroit. And so there was a daddy there that had a dungeon basement. And I went over there and I wanted him to fist me. And I got fisted on the first try.
What?
I was first try. I was 18 years old. And I was just so wanted it so bad. And I was just, I have always kind of thought that I was anatomically or genetically like kind of predisposed to be okay to take fists. Mm-hmm. I have really long torso, really wide hips. And so like
childbearing hips,
childbearing hips. Exactly. So I feel like it's just sort of like, it just lets me be more, agreeable to taking fists. And then as far as Hunger FF kind of came about, the first guy that I met on Manhunt, his screen name was Hunger. And so like, I was always thought that was a really great name. And then, I used to do porn under a name RJ Danvers for Raging Stallion from 2006 to 2009. I retired and then, came back under a pseudonym Hunger FF and was just posting amateur videos, not showing my face. And then, I posted one video that went viral, of me getting fisted on the back of a pickup truck. And that just exploded. And so that when that video went up, that I decided to start showing my face, and then I decided to turn it into my full-time job. It just grew so exponentially fast that I was able to kind of like stop doing what I was doing at the time, which was selling insurance. It was so boring. And so I ended up just kind of immersing myself in Hunger FF and HFF Media and making videos and performances and stuff like that. And so it just kind of grew exponentially from there. So,
and here you are.
And here I am all these years later. So like Hunger FF started in 2017. So
awesome. So you're going to be providing us a lot of the educational content for this episode. So if someone wants to get into fisting, what are some important safety things they should know?
Okay. So as far as safety is concerned, the biggest thing that I would say is you need to, like, before you introduce chems into your play, like, you need to know what your body's capable of doing sober. And so, like, fisting is an inherently dangerous activity because you're going against millennia of evolution that say that that's a one-way street. And so, like you're retraining your body to accept something inside of your body that's not usually supposed to be there. And so it's like, there's a lot of like things that are just like saying in your body, like, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. There's mental blocks, there's physical barriers, muscles that you can't control voluntarily that are preventing things from going up there. So to be sober and experimenting with fisting or butt play in general is probably the biggest safety suggestion I can give to people. And then like, if I am sober, but I know a lot of people that fist are not. And so like, I've just always said that like, learn what you're capable of doing and taking when you're sober before you introduce them into your life. So, the type of lube that you use, a lot of guys that I run into still will try to fist me with like standard silicone Swiss Navy, like wet lube, whatever. And there's lubes that are specifically designed for fisting. I'm a big X Lube fan. X Lube is a synthetic lube that's a powder based lubricant that you mix with water, and then it just turns into like, you can adjust the viscosity of it based on how much water you add. There's no such thing as too much lube. Using a ton of lube is extremely important. Making sure that your tops have their nails filed appropriately. I'll do the nails for my tops a lot of time. I bring out a file and I'm like, oh, no, let me take care of them for you. It's kind of like part of foreplay a little bit. And so, and then just communication, open and honest communication. Like, I think that one thing that guys get really hung up on is cleaning out and like getting ready and prepared and diet and stuff like that. And so like, it's important to get cleaned out for fisting, whatever. But also to not get so hung up on it that you overdo it. And then like you hurt your butthole in the process, like, you know, over cleaning or getting so much water in your ass that you can't, like, you know, you just retain water and stuff like that. And just being aware that, you know, that is what it's designed for. And so if it happens, it happens. You just kind of like clean out and keep going. So it's like, a lot of guys get really hung up on making sure that they're super clean. Am I clean? It's like, I'll tell you when you're not, you know, it's that type of thing. So, as far as safety goes, it's just getting prepared as far as cleaning out, using the appropriate lube, and nails filed and doing it sober. So are my big points, I would say.
Excellent. Now, not every bottom is perhaps as genetically predisposed as you were. So. Correct. If someone as a bottom really wants to explore fisting, what's a good way to get started?
Okay, so this is really important. This is a really important topic, I think, because a lot of guys that are curious about fisting reach out to tops or to guys that are into fisting and say, I want you to train me to take a fist. And so the thing is with fisting, it's very much like the exploratory part of it in the beginning is something that I really feel strongly needs to be done kind of alone. Like with toys and stuff like that, graduating to different size toys. Hang on a second.
Sorry, that's his beautiful dog. People don't want that.
My dog is just kind of pacing around. She had a stroke recently, so she's just kind of weird. So she just sort of walks in circles and stuff. But anyways, so exploring your own body and getting comfortable with the sensations that are involved with fisting is really important, because when you do it with someone else, like, there's a lot of like, stop and go. And so when you're doing it alone, you're learning your body, you have to retrain your body to say, this is pleasurable to have something go this far inside my ass or this big inside my ass. And so a lot of that needs to be done kind of alone and on your own terms and with your own, you know, in your own space, comfortable, you know, toys. The toys that people should be using are generally, like, I would suggest Hanky's toys or Square Peg. Two brands. They're made of, they're not medical grade silicone. A lot of people have a misconception about that, but what they are is they're platinum cured silicone, and that's going to not affect your body. It's not going to your body's not going to reject it in any way. Because a lot of times you use toys that are made of materials that are toxic to your body. A lot of those old dildos that were made early 2000s and stuff like that, that are still sitting in packages, those things are dangerous because they're made of a material that we're actually allergic to. And so you have an allergic reaction to it when it goes inside your body and your butthole lights on fire. It's a terrible feeling. So the new toys are generally made of platinum silicone, and that's really comfortable. And so getting to know your own body and your limits and your, you know, what you're capable of handling on your own terms, then taking that trained butthole with you into a session makes it a lot more enjoyable for both people, I think.
What a great answer. What about tops who maybe want to learn how to fist someone? What's a good way for someone to learn how to do it?
So I would suggest, so there's a certain kind of intuition that tops will eventually end up learning. And so like, as they fist with more, you know, more partners and stuff like that. So are we talking like total tops, like guys that are just like,
I don't know. Answer it how you like.
Okay. So like, I think that the best tops are fisting bottoms. You know, guys that know what it feels like to get fisted are generally kind of more in tune with the bottom than that they're fisting. But I know a lot of total tops that are just really fantastic. And so it's about reading your bottom's body language, verbal, nonverbal communication. If bottoms are pulling away, don't chase them with your hand in their ass, like pull it out, like, you know, and, cause that's one thing that I've found, a lot of guys will, when I'm kind of recoiling off of them a little bit, if it's too much, they'll kind of like follow me with their hand in my ass. I'm like, no, bitch, I'm running away from you. Like, like, don't follow me. If it's clearly that I'm trying to get off your hand, like time to take it out. But yeah, just being really conscious and present, not being, it's so important that the tops are not on drugs. Because there's a level of connection that you need to maintain, and a level of alertness and awareness that you're not going to be poking a hole through something, you know, and just really reading your bottom and know, you know, one thing that I really love when tops ask me is, and I do this every time I fist somebody, I said, what do I need to know about your butthole? What do I need to know? Like, what, tell me about your hole. What do you like? What do you not like? And then, fisting isn't a one size fits all type of activity. It's kind of, it varies by person. So I would say that asking your bottom what kind of fisting they like, what style they like, if they're into width, if they're into depth, if they're into punching, if they're into kind of intimate slow fisting, and just adapting your style based on what they like.
That's actually in part a reassuring answer for me, because that notion of being really present, because I wouldn't call myself a fisting top, but I do have small hands, as you've seen.
Oh, I'm great. I did
know them. And so I fisted, and I often feel like I just have to be utterly present. I often have my eyes closed so I can like feel my hand at the intersection and then just listen to them. And that's actually, then I'm not fucking up. Are you telling me I'm not fucking up?
You're not fucking up.
And yay!
Yeah, no, that's perfect. And so, and I do the same thing when I top, I close my eyes all the time. And so like, cause it's me, it's like, I visualize when I'm topping, like what I'm doing inside their body, and like, kind of like I visualize like the pathway and stuff like that. And everybody's kind of got their own. I've always said that fisting, tops, every hand is like a lock, a key, and every butthole is like a lock, and every key kind of goes into a lock a little bit different. You know, no two keys are the same. No two locks are the same. And so it's like, you've got to kind of adjust. Sometimes you go in with your hand, you know, with your hand facing with the palm down. Sometimes you got to go with your palm facing up. Sometimes they, you know, it's just everybody's bone structure is a little bit different. Right. Musculature is a little different. So it's like, you just kind of have to feel what feels most comfortable for the bottom.
And I do find like, I literally feel like I put all of my awareness in my hand, and buttholes are very communicative. Like,
yes.
I'm really able there. There have been that moments where they just sort of sigh and open up, and it's like, oh, okay, now I can go forward, right? It's so intimate. I think fisting for me, the pleasure of it is that connection that you talked about. And like you, I'm sober, and I think if you're not sober, you can't have the connection because you're not present.
Sure, yeah, and I agree with that. I've had many experiences back when I wasn't sober where I was fisting with guys that were on G or on ketamine or meth or whatever. And like, I've actually had an experience one time where a guy G'd out while he was fisting me, and I had to slither like a snake off of his arm. And I'm just like, oh God, here I go. Like, I hope he's not going to like, you know, and so like, kind of like scooting off of the arm and being like, God, this was, you know, they're snoring when they're fisting me. And I turn around and I'm like, what the fuck, bro? So like, it's happened to me a few times. And so I'm really happy those days are behind me.
Indeed. We are all happy those days are behind all of us. Yes, those of us who are sober. You talked already a little bit about this sort of fear of not being clean enough and this obsession with cleaning. Do you have a good basic recommended prep regime?
Everybody's different. And so, like, I know a lot of guys have, like, really, everybody has their own kind of method to cleaning out. And so, like, for me, what works for me is I eat, generally speaking, all day, every day, whether or not I'm getting fisted or not. And so, like, but I take a lot of fiber at night. I take Metamucil at night, which is, like, that's, like, the big trick, I think. Drinking a lot of water, taking Metamucil. And then typically what happens is as I eat my last meal, drink a bunch of Metamucil, go to bed. And then I wake up in the morning and I have a cup of coffee and I have a breakfast. And then everything I ate the day before generally has to come out of me at that point. And then I can start my clean out. And my clean outs are generally pretty quick because with the fiber and the water and everything, it just makes everything kind of come out easier. And so, but there are days where I struggle. And so my clean outs are either going to take me 15 minutes or going to take me 2 hours.
Right.
And so but generally speaking, I will only play with guys that, like, if somebody tells me, some top tells me I only fist clean holes or I only fist with guys that are spotless. I expect you to be spotless. I will pass up on that person.
Poop happens.
And I'm not going to be sitting in my head the whole time going, oh God, I hope I'm okay. And never really truly being present in the moment. And so, like, I tend to shy away from guys that are like that, that are, you know, very militant about your cleanouts. And so, like, if they're understanding or whatever, great. That's cool. I have a regular fist buddy here. You know him, Raunchy Wolf One. And so I'm always like, just proceed with caution. And he always goes, I've never, in the years that I've been fisting you, I've never even seen a chocolate chip inside of you. So, like, so he's like, shut up with this nonsense about going, you know, whatever. And so, but it happens sometimes. And so, like, I think that one thing that guys just need to remember is that it's your body is an organism. It's not a machine.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like you can do so much, but then it just sort of, you know, you just kind of relax. And if you're constantly worried about being clean, you're never truly present in the moment and enjoying it, I feel like.
I will say one of the things I love about fisting is I feel like for me as a top, it is a no pressure scene. Because yes. I always feel like there are going to be times where people are just going to say, my butt's not cooperating. It's not going to happen today. And then we're just going to cuddle, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, I just feel like I don't have expectations that I'm going to get in or I'm going to get deep. And so whatever happens, happens. It's a team sport. We're working together. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, if you bring these expectations in, it's crushing everyone from yeah. the moment you start.
And that's the best thing about fisting too, is that everybody's arms are always hard. And so there's no like, oh, am I going to get a hard on? And, you know, performance anxiety. If you have like the self-confidence and self-assuredness as a top, you don't got to worry about your dick getting hard. It's like, yeah. It's so great. It's like, you know, because my dick doesn't cooperate all the time when I'm trying to fuck. And so, like, that's what I love about fisting is I can go in. I know I'm a good fisting top. So I go into these situations kind of like very confident because I'm not having to worry about, is my dick going to cooperate? Am I going to get hard? Am I going to stay hard to fuck them? Whatever. It's like, so, it's a really low pressure, sport.
And that makes all this much more pleasure because you're not like having all this anxiety to deal with as well.
Yeah. And I do really consider fisting like a sport.
I do think of it as a team sport. Like I'm there to cooperate with my teammate to create pleasure. And that's why I'm so attentive and present and listening to that feedback. It is definitely a team sport.
Yeah, definitely.
And where everybody wins.
Everybody does win, and I'm very excited to play this sport with you one day. So.
Oh, yeah. For people listening, that's going to happen at some point. So you already said your recommended lube, which was X-Lube. I know there are other powdered lubes. Do you find them just as good? Is there a particular reason why you like X-Lube?
So I just recently became an X-Lube convert. So, like, I have always been a J-Lube junkie, and, mm-hmm. like, I've always just... I've used J-Lube since I started, and I know how to make it perfectly in a matter of seconds. And so, but the thing with J-Lube is that it's really difficult to get off. You've got to, it's not a synthetic lube. It's a natural sugar-based lube.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can only leave it sitting out for as long as you leave a cake sitting out. So, like, J-Lube will actually grow bacteria and rot and get you sick if you don't use it fast enough. And so when you use expired J-lube, you get really bad diarrhea and like you get sick, stuff like that. So it's not acute thing. So, and J-lube is just like, you know, it's kind of temperamental. So X-lube is a synthetic version of J-lube that doesn't have any of the sugar base, kind of like the sugar mm-hmm. base that J-lube does. So it doesn't rot, it doesn't go bad. Mm-hmm. You can let it sit out forever and it's still going to be good. And so, and they have a really solid method of mixing it. Like they give you a cap when the bottle of X-lube, that three caps makes a perfect mixture of J-lube or of X-lube. And so, I just had the boys, there's a podcast called Such Fun. That's a fisting podcast. And they were just in town visiting me, the host of the show. And they brought me some X-lube samples. And I finally was like, fine, I'll try X-lube. Because I got so tired of like, J-lube gets gummy, it gets everywhere. You got to use salt to remove it.
Oh my God.
And so, yeah. So it's like, and it just gets gummy and sticky and tacky. So X-lube, I found, doesn't have that same kind of tackiness issue. Mm-hmm. It doesn't get kind of tacky like J-lube does, and it comes off with just water. You can just rinse it off, and it comes right off.
I also understand that J-lube's really bad for diabetics because of its sugar base.
Yeah, it's not good. And then there's also like a warning on the label that says like if it gets into your perinatal cavity, then it can be lethal. And so like if you have like a perforation or some kind of puncture or something that gets into your system, it can be dangerous and lethal. So it's like, X-lube, I don't think, has that kind of warning on the label or anything like that. So there's downsides to J-lube. Like I said, I've been using J-lube for the last 17 years and never had a problem with it. It's just that I found X-lube to be a better alternative.
I've also heard that every fisting bottom has like their own personal secret formula for the lube they like. Do you find that to be true? Because I know some are like three drops of clove oil and one scoop of Crisco. And
I used to use my J-lube or my lube concoction used to be J-lube, mineral oil, clove oil, preparation H, and lidocaine, all mixed together into a blender. And then I would have this like really amazing lube, and like the mineral oil gave it a kind of cool consistency. The preparation H would keep your swelling down, and so like there's lots of different tricks and stuff to use. But I've since gotten lazy, and I'm just comfortable with a bottle of X lube. So,
and is there some website with lube recipes for people who might want to experiment? I mean, how do people come up with this?
Well, I think it's just kind of trial and error. Like a lot of guys just have their own kind of preferences for what they like to add to it. Clove oil is a little bit of an aesthetic. Lidocaine is also an anesthetic. And then mineral oil I used to add just for consistency purposes. And Crisco is kind of the old school standard. I think people have moved away from Crisco in the last 10 years. And Crisco is good, but what I don't like about Crisco is that whenever you go into somebody's house that they use Crisco as their main lube, you can kind of tell right when you walk in their house because it's kind of baked into like their towels and their sheets. And like no matter how much washing you do, it's like once it's in the sheets and once it's in the towels, that smell's not going away. And so like it's kind of gross. Like so like I just I'm not a big Crisco fan. My hole locks up when I use Crisco.
I will say I had an ex who used to make little Crisco balls and freeze them.
Oh, those are delicious.
Right? Because very soothing, and then you're lubricating all up in there. So, I mean, it has some advantages. I'm assuming you can't freeze X-Lube the same way.
Well, you can. They actually make silicone, little spherical silicone ice cube makers. And I have a friend of mine in Michigan that does frozen J-Lube balls. Mm-hmm. And so he makes these little balls of J-Lube that you can just roll in like a golf ball inside some of that. And you can actually feel it as the bottom. You can feel it kind of going through your system. It's really cool, but it lubricates you all the way through, which is great. I'm at a point now where I can just bend over and pull my hole apart and you can dump it all the way to my throat. So a lot of guys don't have that. So the little J-Lube balls, the frozen lube balls are a good kind of way to get lube deeper inside your hole.
Yeah. And besides lube, are there other supplies people might want to have handy when they're doing the scene?
Absolutely. So the kind of standard supplies that you want to have on hand, obviously nail files for emergencies or whatever, for, you know, prep. But then puppy pads, like mm-hmm. the wee wee pads that dogs use. My friend actually owns a company called Play Pads, which are basically extra large black puppy pads that are specifically made for fisting. That company is really cool. They're great, but you can get them on Amazon, like the puppy pads. I buy the black charcoal ones. Get like 100 pack for like $20. And they're so easy to throw away. And then paper towels. And then kind of one thing that, my friends and I have done recently, I have a friend of mine here that bought us all, my circle of fisting friends bought us all, towel warmers.
Oh,
and so we warm up wet towels with like eucalyptus oil or whatever. And then when you're done fisting, when you're taking a break, just putting a hot towel on your bottom's butt, it feels so good. It's like a little kind of like post aftercare, like, and it's really calming and soothing. And so like, just that's kind of going overboard, but paper towels, puppy pads, and nail files are a great kind of like start. And then if you want to go overboard and be extra, then the towel warmer is great too. So.
Let's talk about aftercare. Not everyone's going to have a towel warmer, but what other sorts of aftercare do you think is important, or what kind of aftercare do you like?
So I'm a big fan of, I usually take an ibuprofen either before or after play to kind of keep the inflammation down. And then what you can do is after fisting, if you ever had a particularly rough session, you can put some ice cubes up your butt, and that'll kind of like get some of the swelling to come down. It'll stop bleeding if there's any bleeding happening. Ice cubes in your hole definitely help. And then just kind of like being kind to yourself. And like, I used to use Preparation H after every fisting session just to kind of like calm my butthole down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so just like shower, and like you want to get the lube off you as fast as possible, because if you leave lube sitting on you, I have skin reactions to lube sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah. I let it sit on me. So I would say just kind of like, and then like me and my friends always after we fist, like we always end up just like going out to eat together, or like, you know, it's like we have like, we order food or we chill or whatever. And it's just kind of like fun. Like it's like kind of like it's very brotherhood, like camaraderie, like just like kind of, it's like a brotherhood of like fisters basically. Mm. And I found that to be pretty common around the country, that like a lot of guys will have like, there's little fisting clubs in a lot of major cities, and they all kind of do the same type of things.
That's great.
But, yeah.
Cool. You mentioned a little bit, ice cubes will stop bleeding. How do you know as a bottom, how do you know if something went wrong, and what do you do about it?
So if you have a fear that something's gone wrong, it's better to be proactive and go to the hospital than waiting and discovering later. Because if, God forbid, you got a perforation, mm-hmm. you're going to feel some cramping. A lot of times there's no blood. But if you feel cramping, or if you hear a noise that sounds like bubble wrap popping coming from your insides, that's a problem. And so like, and then you need to go to the hospital as soon as possible, because you can get easily septicemia from that type of issue, an accident. And so one thing that I would say, there's two methods to repairing a colon tear or something like that. There's a lot of doctors that default to having staples put in and stuff like that if there's an accident. And so like one thing that I've been grateful and lucky that I've never had an accident, but if I do, I know that I'm going to ask to be hand sewn back together, because there's two methods. There's either hand sewing with needle and thread basically, or staples, and the staples are in you forever. The hand sewing actually like those you feel normal again afterwards.
Right.
I've fisted guys that have been sewn together, fisted guys that have been stapled together, and you can always feel the staples. How do you know something goes wrong? I think that there's just like an inherent kind of like, like something's not right in my body. And there's like a subconscious kind of like red flag that goes off in your head. And I've had instances where I've thought something went wrong, and, you know, and I went to the doctor, and nothing was wrong. The most damage I've ever had done to me was like a small tear, that caused a lot of bleeding. Mm-hmm. I know that whenever I bleed, because I don't bleed often, and when I saw blood, I was like, oh God, something's wrong. I went to the doctor, and I had a little GI bleed that was not like serious, but it was I wouldn't want to go through it again. But just being proactive about your health, because if you've got any kind of like, and I always tell guys too, whenever I'm fisting them, if I feel something that doesn't feel normal, I'll pull them aside afterwards and be like, hey, like maybe it's, you might need to go get something checked out. I felt something a little abnormal. And you know, that's just kind of common courtesy. If somebody felt something weird inside me, I'd want to know. So yeah, it's just kind of, again, just communication with each other and being upfront and honest with each other.
So are there any resources people should know about, major websites or things they should be checking out?
So if you're on Facebook, there's a lot of really great, primarily there's a group called F Squared, which is really great. It's run by a guy named Coulter, who's like a wealth of knowledge. And actually, I wonder if I'm going to, while I have you here, I'm going to Coulter, because I'll come back to this. Coulter runs a fisting website basically is like he does these articles about different types of just any kind of thing you'd want to know about fisting, like anatomy things, all the things that we've talked about. He's got a really great site. I just shot him a text so I can get the website name.
Great.
So yeah, he's really super knowledgeable, and he does a lot of homework about he does a lot of research about like these things, he writes about them, and it's always really interesting. And so he runs F Squared, which is the Facebook group, and he posts a lot of articles there. And they're really great. So, and then also my website is also a wealth of knowledge too.
Well, let's talk about your website. Tell us about your website. Let's start there.
So I started hungerff.com in 2020, after I was struggling a lot with censorship issues on OnlyFans and XTube and Pornhub. I have a prolapse, which is what we haven't talked about that yet. But that's kind of what I'm known for, is that like my insides basically turn inside out when I want them to, and then I can retract them back in. And it's kind of like it's a desirable thing for a lot of fisters to have one, or to see one, or tops like to play with them, bottoms like to have them, a lot of guys that don't like them, but that's sort of what I'm known for. And so but I found a lot of my content was being censored for being too extreme or borderline gore porn. And so I decided to take the money that I had earned from those websites and invest in building my own platform. So I did that so I could have autonomy and not have to worry about playing by anybody else's rules. So I update the site 3 times a week. And I very much, the way that I shoot videos, I really disagree with the way that porn kind of like makes sex seem so perfect all the time. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of like Falcon or Naked Sword or men.com, they make these scenes that are so cookie cutter perfect. Like things are not always perfect during sex. And like, just because your sex life doesn't look like a porno doesn't mean that it's not valid and good. And so like what I do is all my videos start with me hopping in the sling, and then it includes all the warm up, and it includes the aftercare, and it includes conversations in the beginning or in the middle of the sex. Like I never cut out conversation, because I feel like a lot of the things that we say are important during sex. And so and it validates these people who don't have this sex life that looks like a power fisting session all the time. I want them to see that there's a trajectory, a linear trajectory of beginning, middle, and an end to sex. And so I always say at the end of my videos, they always end with me saying, I think I need a break. And so they start with me hopping in the sling, and they end with me saying, I think I need a break. And I don't cut out any of the middle stuff either. I just try to show a really authentic session. So it's very fly on the wall. I don't use cameramen. I don't use, I want people to feel like they're alone in the room with me and my partner. Mm-hmm. And so, it's very authentic and very real. And so it's if you want to know what a real fisting session looks like, I would suggest going to my site and checking it out. And, there's a lot.
Don't you have some products as well now? Didn't you start a line of, tell us about that.
So I started a couple of years ago. I reached out to Hanky's Toys, which is the company that does like the premium silicone dildos. Mm-hmm. And I asked them if they'd be interested in doing a dildo with me based on my prolapse. And it took a couple of years to kind of go back and forth before we finally solidified the project. And so that just came out in May. And so I just launched my e-commerce section on the site. So we sell harnesses, dog tags, the prolapse dildo. And so it's comes in four sizes, you know, from the smallest one is, it comes in a small size that's only like 6 inches big. And then like the real life size is a much bigger. And so, it's kind of cool. It's really crazy to see people on Twitter posting videos of themselves fucking their ass with my prolapse. So it's pretty wild.
So if I took this dildo, like, does it match? Is it like a key? Like, would it match your prolapse exactly if I shoved it inside of you?
Yes. It's really, I've taken a picture of it side by side with the real one, like hanging up to it, and they're identical. And so, and it fits me like a perfect plug. So like it goes in perfectly inside me. I'm like, this is amazing. This is great. So, it's pretty cool. It's been a wild experience to see people using it, and it's on sale at the Eagle now, which is really exciting.
Eagle Wilton Manors, to be clear.
Yes. Yeah. So they're carrying it there. It's really,
are you planning more products?
I am going to be selling, that is something that I think I'm going to get into one day, is selling more toys and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But the only thing that I've got current plans on listing is like all of the, I do a lot of cosplay videos. Mm-hmm. So I have all my cosplay suits that I've worn in fisting videos that I'm going to eventually sell to, and like props and stuff that I've used, like Pokeballs and like, oh
my God. So many of my listeners are having nerdgasms right now.
Yeah. I have a Captain Marvel suit. I have Ash Ketchum suit. I did a video where I dressed up as. Did you watch WandaVision?
Yeah.
So I Wanda's son Billy is like one of my favorite superheroes, and so I did a cosplay scene with dressed up as Wiccan when Billy he gets older, and then his boyfriend Hulkling fisted me, who's my friend Logan Hawk is this big silicone roided out muscle beast, and we painted him green, and it was really cool. it was cool. So I'm selling that suit too. So it's mostly just the cosplay suits and stuff like that, but then eventually one day I'll get into more dildos and stuff too, or poppers, video head cleaner, whatever.
Have you ever thought of making your own lube, like working with, I see you in a scientific laboratory with everyone in these white coats and vials.
Yeah.
And
I think we found the perfect concoction.
Formula X. Yes.
Formula X. Exactly. So, the head cleaner is one thing I've thought about. I do have a merchandise line called Hungerware that I sell on Threadless. That's just a bunch of t-shirts and stuff like that. I've kind of got my toes in my fingers in a lot of pots as far as like
your prolapse in a lot of pots.
My prolapse in a lot of pots, yes. So it's been kind of cool. It's like you would have told me 5 years ago that it would be doing what I would be doing what I'm doing now with the brand. I would have been like totally disbelief. It's just grown so much.
Do you ever get tired of being the brand?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Tell us about that, because I identify with that. Let me say that, because I am often identified with my brand in quotation marks, and sometimes it can get a little exhausting. So what is that like for you? How do you experience it, and how do you deal with it?
It's been, so my whole brand is really about authenticity and community. And so like I've spent a lot of time building up the fisting community and trying to grow it and expand it and make it more widely accessible to anybody that wants to be a part of it. But what I've found is in doing that, I've sort of made myself, it's hard for me to be part of the community anymore because I can't go anywhere without, I can't be Ryan James anywhere anymore. Mm-hmm. So like, I can't go to Fist Fest. I can't go to Rose Bowl. I can't go to these fisting events that everybody else gets to go to and enjoy, because whether or not I'm being paid to be there, or if I'm paying to be there, I am Hunger FF 24/7 to these people. And so it's like, I'll be getting fisted and then they'll come up and be like, can you sign this for me? And I'm like, now's not a good time, bro. And so like, they'll come and try to talk to me. And like, and I'm just like, you know, I just want to be able to experience these events like a patron, like I used to be able to do it. And I just think that that ship has sailed for me for now.
Yeah.
And so like, and there's an old school porn star that I'm a huge fan of and friends with, you know, do you remember Corey J?
No.
Corey J was like one of the OG fisting kings back in like the early 2000s, late 90s. And he told me that he ran into the same issue and that it's just going to take a long time. Once I stop doing Hunger FF, it's going to take like another 15 years for it to stop.
Sure.
And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with private one-on-one sessions now. It's like, that's more what my vibe is anyways. Like, I don't need to be part of these big public spectacles anymore. I like being in a room with someone alone and like having my sex life be a little bit more private when it's for me. Mm-hmm. Like when I do films and stuff like that, I love filming. I love editing. I love the creative process. I love all of that stuff. But what I do, I've been really working on trying to make sure that I have a healthy balance of sex for me and sex for other people.
Are you into anything besides fisting? And then do you find people like don't want anything from you but fisting?
I am kind of, I mean, I am into almost everything.
Really?
There's very little. The only thing that turns me off is non-consensual sex. That's the only thing that turns me off, whether that's guys that want to fuck animals or guys that are into like rape stuff, like rape scenes and stuff like that. That turns me off, but literally everything else is fair game for me. And so like, I prefer fisting. So like, I prefer fisting. So like, and I always joke around because sometimes I'll meet up with guys and they'll just want to do everything but fisting. And I'm like, you know, it is Hunger FF. It's not Hunger BJ or Hunger Nipple Play or Hunger whatever. It's Hunger FF because that's what I like. And so like, it's funny like that. So, but I prefer fisting. And I used to have, I used to get so frustrated when I was using because I would run into these situations where I would hook up with guys that would just come over and they'd just be using me for drugs basically. But it's like, we would talk about fisting and then they'd come over and they wouldn't fist me. Mm. And I would be so frustrated. And so since getting sober, today is my 45th day in a row getting fisted.
For those keeping track, we're recording on October 21st.
Yeah, so it's my day 45. Every Saturday is a multiple of 7. So like, or no, excuse me, day 42. So every Saturday is a multiple of 7. And so wait, is today Saturday or Sunday?
Today is Saturday.
Yeah, today's 42 days. So, and so I'm counting it like a day count. So it's funny. So,
I'll give you your
90
fist chip.
I love fisting. Yeah, exactly.
Congratulations, your 90 fist chip. Well done.
So funny. I just really love it. I love fisting in general. Like, and I say that all the time when I'm getting fisted. Like, I'll just be getting fisted and I'll think to myself, I love this so much. I'm like bleeding serotonin and dopamine from my eyes right now. I'm so happy. And so it's like, I love it so much. I love, like, this morning I was fisting my boyfriend and I was just like, I'm just in awe of it all the time. It's never lost its luster for me.
That's fantastic.
It's always been my thing ever since I was a kid. So like,
it's always been magical.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm really glad that I found it. So,
I think we're all glad you found it too. And on that note, we're going to wrap this up, but Ryan/Hunger FF, it has been a sheer delight to have you on the show. I'm so grateful. So grateful. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. This has been amazing. I'm lucky to be a part of it. So.
And finally, we have Ask Edge, the segment where I answer questions submitted by all of you. This segment relies on you, so please feel free to consider submitting a question. You can email it to ask@fullcow.show, or even better, leave me a voicemail at speakpipe.com/LetherEdge, LTHREDGE. And our first question is actually a comment, and it comes from Jim.
Hello, Edge. This is Jim. I just listened to your Master Slave episode. I can't thank you enough. That was so incredibly cathartic for me. I am in the same place I think you are. Period. I found a boy, and he definitely brings the saddest out in me, and I'm learning so much about what really is inside of me and the power that I can hold. Period. It's been an incredible journey, as you are now exploring Master Slave. Period. Good for both of us. I wanted to let you know I thought that was one of the best episodes I think you've ever done, and I've listened to every single one that you put out, interludes and full episodes. I've also followed you on a number of social media, and almost met you at IML the last time you were there. Period. In any case, I just wanted to say thank you. I hope you're doing well. You take care of yourself, and I look forward to the next episode. Thanks again.
Wow, Jim, thank you so much for that comment. It is very meaningful to me. You know, metrically speaking, the podcast doesn't seem to do very well. And that's just looking at numbers. So I know how many followers I have on Instagram. I know how many likes a post is getting. It gives me a sense of how people are reacting to the content I'm putting out there. And people leave comments. So I'm able to get a direct engagement. If you look at the people following me on the podcast, first of all, it's really hard to consolidate those numbers because some people are getting the podcast from the website, fullcow.show. Some people go through Apple Podcasts, Google Play, right? There are all these different places where I have to go see how many listens or streams an episode got. It gets a little exhausting. And even then, when I put all the available data on the podcast together, it just doesn't look very impressive. So when I get messages like this, and I've gotten several of these in person, through texts, through direct messages, when I get messages that tell me, oh, that podcast episode like really resonated for me, or, oh, thank you for covering that topic on the podcast, or, oh, I just love listening to your podcast, anything like that, it's really the only thing that keeps me doing this podcast. Because, you know, the rest of my social media is on no schedule. So if I don't feel like posting a video on Instagram, there's not going to be a video on Instagram. But the podcast comes out twice a month, every month, and I have to think of topics and produce content and edit and assemble and upload and blah, 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 blah. It's a lot of work for something that, when I look at the available data, is not providing a lot of impact, which is the return I get. The return I get isn't just, oh, look how many followers I have. The return I get is knowing that it's making some sort of difference for people. So, Jim, thank you for your comment, because it is exactly the kind of thing I need. And our second question comes from Slave Boy.
Greetings, Sir Edge. My name is Slave Boy, known as Norwegian Slave Boy. My pronouns is he, him, it, and I would love if you could make a segment on vetting. The reason I ask is because some sirs talked about this on a Facebook video last week, claiming that subs has to ask a sir for permission to vet him. My personal view is that vetting is to be done anonymously to protect myself in case of unsafe sirs or masters. What is old guard practice, and what is your view on this?
So the question is about vetting a potential dominant in this instance. As far as what old guard practice is, well, that's always a bit of a mystery, because what we know of the old guard is really quite fragmented. Now, we do know that they were extremely closed, and that anyone who was going to move into the circle of an old guard group, a family, a local cluster of players, they would be thoroughly vetted by someone who would have to introduce them to the group. It was a very closed door type of society, if we want to think of it as a society. So who was doing the vetting had a lot to do with who wanted to bring who into the group. So I find a man really sexy. I want to train him to be my master. I'm going to have to bring him into this old guard setting so that the masters in the group can really train him. There's actually a really brilliant essay on this in the collection Leather Folk, if you're a reader. So yeah, the old guard was super duper duper about extremely thorough vetting of a person. And that wasn't because this knowledge was sacred per se. In part, it was because it was the 50s and 60s and being gay was illegal. And you can imagine what being gay and kinky was like. You could lose your job. You could lose your family. You could lose your housing. So I think there were strongly motivated to make sure that anyone coming in could be very deeply and thoroughly trusted. So that's the first part. The second part is how do I feel about vetting? Now, I will let my listeners know, I did clarify this question with Slave Boy, Norwegian Slave Boy, about this video he saw on Facebook, and he couldn't quite find it again. So he wanted to back off a little bit about the actual content of the video. But I think the question is that if some submissive approaches you and asks you about some dominant that you've played with, then what's the best way to handle that? Do you get permission from the dominant before speaking about the dominant? I would say, if you're asking how I approach this situation, that I think it's important for there to be a pretty open flow of information across players of all kink identities, that we should, I have no fears of anyone talking about their experience with me. I encourage it because I feel like I'm decent, right? Like I don't cause a lot of harm. I hope not. I feel like it's okay for people to talk about me. And part of what I value is the reputation I've crafted. And the way I craft that is through my actions. So I don't have an issue with that. I do think it's worth thinking about the difference between vetting someone and gossiping about someone. I'm not sure that gossip is something I want to necessarily endorse. Also, I will say, I find that when I'm interested in someone or getting to know someone, I don't ask my friends about them because I want to figure out my own sense of who this person is, independent of the impression they may have left with others. Because, you know, sometimes it has nothing to do with the person I'm interested in. Maybe they just had really bad dynamics with this friend of mine, or maybe that other friend of mine met him 10 years ago and he's changed since then. So I personally like to vet through my own set of filters, which at this point, after 30 years, are really advanced. I can filter out people who I probably shouldn't be around just by getting to know them. I think for submissives in particular, it is important for them to essentially get letters of recommendation before they meet a potential new dominant person. I think the key part for me that distinguishes this process of vetting from gossiping is I will never tell you my opinion of someone unless you ask me my opinion of someone. If I am unprompted talking about someone, I feel personally that I am risking moving into gossip, and that is not something that aligns with my value set. So if you say you're talking to so-and-so, I'm not going to start talking about so-and-so and my experience with so-and-so. That's just not who I am personally. However, if you say, I've been talking to so-and-so, do you know this person? What can you tell me about them? Then I will share, and I will share openly and honestly. When it comes down to vetting, it is critical because there's an extraordinary potential for harm in the play we do. And your approach to that will depend on your set of filters, your set of experiences, where you are in your journey. You may very well, and I do endorse and recommend it, you ask other submissives about a person. And that person should have no fear about that at all. That person, if anything, should almost encourage you to talk with people that they've played with. They should be confident enough in the track record they have left in the world
for you to examine it closely. You don't need to ask people's permission to do this, and certainly no one should be seeking my permission to say something about their experiences with me. And if we need some solid ground to stand on, beyond simple protection from trauma, it would be very, very old guard to vet someone extremely thoroughly before entering into a kink encounter with them. So thank you so very much for that interesting question, Norwegian Slave Boy. That's it for Ask Edge this time. Please, please consider submitting a question either through email or through SpeakPipe. Both those links are in the show notes. And that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for joining me. Please consider subscribing, or you can send feedback to edge@fullcow.show. As always, may your leather journey be blessed.